Welcome to the Wealthy Speaker Podcast. This is the podcast dedicated to people who want to speak more as a way to build their income and grow their business.
Welcome, everyone, to Recession Proof Your Speaking Career, A Great Speech is Number One, with our very special guest expert, Joe Calloway. Again, Joe, thank you so much for being here.
Happy to be here, Jay.
A little bit of housekeeping before we start. Today's class will be broken into two sections. Number one is the speech as it relates to business, and number two is speech mechanics. So our format is going to change slightly due to the high volume of people on the line. Rather than open up the lines for questions, which has caused some technical difficulties in the past, I would like you to email me your questions at jane@speakerlauncher.com, and it would be really helpful if you could put a topic area for the question in the subject line, for example, strategy question, speech question, etc., and then we'll know where to put them in as we go through our two separate sections here. So let me get right down to it with our introduction of Mr. Joe Calloway. Joe is a business author, performance consultant, and restaurant owner whose client list reads like a who's who in business. From Saks Fifth Avenue to BMW to American Express and IBM, a wide range of companies depend on Joe for insight into today's marketplace. Joe is a partner in IdeaBistro.com, a marketplace for motivational video resources. Joe is also a partner in Mirror, an award-winning restaurant in Nashville, which was recently featured on television Food Network. And if you haven't been to Mirror, you must stop by. It's fabulous. Joe is the best-selling author of Becoming a Category of One, which received rave reviews from the New York Times, Retailing Today, and many others. He is also the author of Indispensable, How to Become the Company Your Customer Can't Live Without. And his latest book, Work Like You're Showing Off, has also had rave reviews. So, Joe, thank you again so much for being here. I really, really appreciate it, especially based on what you've been through in the last few days.
No, this is so much fun compared to what I've been through. I'm happy to be here, believe me.
Well, do tell us, what have you been up to? I think our participants will be interested to hear what you've been doing.
Well, the thing is, it's not that big a deal. It's just that the timing of it made it a little bit challenging. On all day Monday and all day Tuesday, I was working with my biggest client, and it was customers of theirs, which were bank executives in Minneapolis. And I actually didn't do any speeches in either of those 2 days. I've been moving towards doing a lot more, conversational stuff from stage, where I, like, interview the CEO on stage. And actually, that's where I get to talk about the stuff that I usually talk about in my speeches can come out in the interview, because the interview is not one-sided. It's between me and the CEO or whoever, and we have a conversation. So instead of a speech, I say, why don't you let me talk to the president of the company on stage, and then he or she can say what they want, and I can then add my perspective. So I did that, and I kind of facilitated a couple of discussion exercises with audience. Anyway, did that all day Monday, all day Tuesday. Tuesday night, flew to Toronto. At about 11 p.m., I got to a branch of a big bank in Canada that I'm working for, TD Canada Trust, and those of you in Canada know that is one of the five big banks up there. Got to one of their branches, and there were about 10 bankers and exactly 12 members of a video crew there, and you know, the lights, the sound, the whole setup. And it was for them to videotape me doing a lot of just me talking into the camera. We started about midnight, finished at 3 or 3:15 in the morning. I went to my hotel room and got about 2 hours sleep, and got up at 6 to start videotaping again in downtown Toronto, where we videoed for a couple of hours. And then went to another location and did some more video, and I got home last night, and I was practically weeping with joy to get back into my own house. But it was an interesting project, and it was just that having to go all night videotaping that was a little bit almost surreal at times.
Wow. So, but in the end, the client got what it was that they wanted, and are you finding that that's just more and more, that people are really doing things in a more unusual way?
Well, here's what I know for me. And by the way, let me throw this caveat into it. The way I do it is not the way anybody else should do it. It's just the way I do it. And maybe you can pick something up from the way I do it that will fit you and your business and your lifestyle, because I've come to realize that one of the things that is so cool about this business is that we can create a lifestyle the way we want to based on where we take our business. And that has heavily influenced some of where I'm taking my business, particularly the last 2 or 3 years. I'm making decisions now that I don't know if they make all that much business sense or not, but they're what I want to do in terms of the way I want to live my life. So there. Now, what was your question? I totally wandered.
Well, let me come back to it.
I do that in my speeches, too.
Well, that's good. We're going to talk about being messy a little bit later. When it comes...
Doing those other things. You were talking about being able to do those other things for clients?
With the client, yeah.
Yeah, with the client. Yeah, for me, here's what it's done. There are companies that 10 years ago I would have given a speech, and if they really liked it, they'd have brought me back the next year, and if they really liked it, they'd have brought me back the next year, and then it would have been pretty much three and out, because how many times can you have the same speaker back over and over and over in the keynote slot? Now, I'll do a speech, I'll come back to another speech the next year, and then I'll say, hey, you know, the next year, instead of me doing a speech, why don't you let me do this interview thing? And then I'll say, hey, the next year, you know something else I could do? We could do a more, instead of a speech, more of a workshop type thing, which a lot of you listening do that. You can do speeches, you can do workshops. I mean, you already do. And then maybe I'll say, hey, you know something else I can do? We could take my material to all of your people across the whole country and all of your branches, offices, whatever. Let's do some customized video. That, for example, is what I was doing night before last in Toronto. So the benefit for me, Jane, in being able to develop all these other things is that it gives me greater longevity with a client, because we keep figuring out different ways that they can use me. I'm going to be, a week after next, I'm spending 8 days with a client in Whistler, and I'm not giving a single speech. I'm interviewing all of their executives on stage. After their keynote speakers, who are not me, I get on stage and ask the keynote speaker questions, and we have conversations.
Oh.
And so, yeah, and so, I mean, they can bring me back every single year to do that, because it's not me giving a speech, which that wears out after a while. So.
That's very cool. So you're there actually... providing the Idea Bistro.
Well, no, Idea Bistro is a different deal. Idea Bistro is a website that I'm just starting that is going to offer. I'm going into the video business in a big way, in terms of producing videos that people can order and use in their meetings. That's going to be strictly a product website.
Very cool. I understood the purpose of it. I was just thinking that was kind of, you were there with a cafe of ideas for them.
Oh, well, that's true, but it doesn't have anything to do with the website. But yeah, it is kind of an Idea Bistro in that sense.
Okay, so based on what you're doing today, just kind of walk us through, just so people on the line who may not be familiar with you or your work understand how, you know, you are really the king of reinventing yourself. So just a little bit of an idea of where you started out. There might be people on the line who are starting there today.
Yeah. Well, I started out actually doing training. I started out doing all-day training seminars for a company called Associated Management Institute. If any of you have heard of Career Track, it was kind of like that. They did public training seminars, you know, from city to city. So I got my start doing training. Then I shifted to speaking, the keynote speaking, and I was pretty much a straight down the middle kind of motivational speaker, although I was always about business. I mean, I always had business references, and I like business, and so it wasn't personal motivation. It was business motivation stuff. And for years, I was positioned as, gosh, what was that? For a long time, Jane, my tagline was, Joe Calloway, Joe Calloway helps turn ordinary meetings into extraordinary events. And so my marketing and my positioning was, I can make your meeting better. I can make your meeting more effective. And it was all about the meeting. Well, then I started becoming more and more interested in the pure businessy part of what I was doing, particularly customer service. And so I shifted, and my position became Joe Calloway is an expert on customer service and creating positive customer experiences. And so it shifted from Joe can make your meeting better to no, Joe can make your company be more customer focused and better at that. And I was very, very much known as one of the customer service guys. There's a guy right now, John DeJulius, who I think his business is called the Customer Service Institute, maybe. Anyway, that's what he does, pure and simple. He's terrific at it. He is known for customer service. And there's tremendous strength in that. When you become known as the go-to gal or the go-to guy on whatever it is, customer service, time management, sales, that's strong stuff. It's particularly helpful if you want to work through bureaus, because if you go to a bureau and they say, what do? And you say, well, I've got 9 different topics in 9 different areas, then what they think, and a lot of times what the end client thinks is, well, then you don't do much of anything, do you? You just kind of dabble in things. Now, don't get me wrong. When I was starting out, somebody would call and say, what do? I'd say, what do you want? You know, I'd go read up on it and come up with a speech. But little by little, I started to narrow my focus. And at some point, I think it is good to have some sort of hook that people can grab hold of, whether it's topic or it might be audience.
Right.
It might be I specialize in working with banks and credit unions. Or I specialize in the, beauty and salon industry. You could do that.
Yeah, for sure. There's lots of people who specialize in
music. Absolutely. Or, Jane, there are people that specialize in spouse programs.
Yeah.
And so, whatever your niche is, it is. But I went from customer service, then I got interested in branding. And when I say branding, I'm not talking about advertising. I'm talking about how the people in a company create the brand of the company by the way they interact with customers. So for a few years, I was really known as the branding guy. And as a matter of fact, does my website still say that, Jane?
Yes.
In the intro? Because we need to change that. We need to update that. So it was branding, and then it kind of became more of a almost kind of an old Tom Peters in search of excellence approach. I was known as the guy that would come in and say, here's what great companies all have in common that your company can do as well. Now I'm starting to be hired a lot for innovation. Yeah, innovation and creativity. Now, the advantage of that from a business standpoint, particularly with bureaus, because I've worked a tremendous amount with bureaus, is a lot of the bureaus really like it, that they say that I'm continually evolving as a speaker. As a matter of fact, Jane, our friend Brian Palmer sent out a special email. Brian Palmer owns the National Speakers Bureau, fabulous big-time bureau out of Chicago. Brian sent an email to every single client of the bureau saying, the reason we love Joe Calloway as a speaker is because he keeps evolving. So that was pretty cool. The other thing, and here's lifestyle or personal satisfaction, I get bored. I just get bored silly doing the same thing. And I can't do it for too long. I've got to, evolve into doing something else, or I just get sick of hearing myself talk about it. The next thing I'm moving into, though, I'm going to keep speaking, but I want to move into producing videos. And we've got our first product that we just put out on the market. And I want to do a lot more, because I'm at the point in my career where my goal is to do less speeches. Actually, I've done fewer speeches each year since 1993, which has been my goal. And I've made more money each year since 1993, which has also been my goal.
Right.
But I want to replace getting on airplanes And if I do get on an airplane, I just have more fun working with a bunch of people making some videos than I do going all by myself to give a speech. So that's kind of the evolution.
Okay. And probably there are some people who might be on the line who have picked their lane and may not shift and change nearly as much as you.
Oh, I can think of tons of speakers. Don Hudson, sales. Now, Don does more than just sales, but Don is a great speaker, been in the business for, 35 years. And when you think sales, who's a great sales speaker? Don Hudson is on everybody's list, and there's tremendous value in picking a lane and staying there. Like I say, just because I've moved from, I'm like Tom Peters. You know, Tom Peters does something on a different subject every couple of years.
Right.
Then there are other people that have said, no, I'm about sales, or I'm about customer service, or I'm about humor, or I'm about personal motivation, and you stay with it. And the value there is you absolutely become known for that, and it makes you much easier to be hired. Listen, there's one bureau, to give you the flip side, there's one bureau that told me a few years ago, said, we can't book you because we can't keep up with what you're doing. We don't know what you do. So, I mean, you change it so much, so we can't book you. I said, well, that's fair. You know, I get it. Yeah.
So based on all of these different ideas, and that's why we do these teleclasses, Joe, is just to give people different ideas of how to run their business, and you take what you want from this call and leave the rest. We're
there you go.
Right? You've listed off a lot of different kind of subject matter. What do you think, based on your being out there in the industry doing this, what do you think corporate buyers are most looking for on the platform when it comes to...
Boy, yeah, Jane, that's a tough one, and I'll tell you why. You will hear people say that, I mean, I've heard over the years, corporate buyers are looking for a return. They've got to be able to go back and say, we didn't waste our time at this meeting, we got hardcore training, and yet, I saw probably about 9 or 10 months ago in, I don't know if it was Successful Meetings magazine, but it was a trade magazine about the meetings business. And it said that they had done a survey of corporate buyers of speakers for events saying, what do your audiences want in a keynote speaker? Here is the profile that won. A motivational speaker who has overcome hardship to achieve success. Now, I am a million miles away from that. I don't do that because I don't talk about my own success. I haven't overcome any hardship. I haven't climbed a mountain. I haven't none of that stuff.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, here all these people are saying, well, you know, events are getting more return-oriented, and you've got to teach them how to do something and give them hard information. They don't want to waste their time with a motivational speaker. Well, just don't give me that. Every event I work has a, most of them, have a purely motivational speaker or a humorist. And yet, in my area where I work, they want, here's one thing I do think they want, unless you've got a set speech, like some...
Like
a Larry Wingate or a lot of motivational speakers that say, or DeWitt Jones, who's a fabulous, you know, speaker from National Geographic, and he shows all the pictures. Fabulous. But he's got his set speech, and he doesn't change it up. He does what he does, and that's great. But what more and more corporate buyers are doing, particularly if you claim to be a business speaker in any way, they'll say, you've got to make your speech about us. You've got to tie your points into our company. You've got to understand where we're trying to go with this company. You know, you've got to understand our history, where we are, where we're going, the specific challenges and opportunities, and you've got to make your speech about that, because if you can't, we can't use you. Now, again, that's pretty much for the business keynoter. They want to see some tie-in to them. But I tell you, I still see every kind of speaker there is out there giving speeches. I mean, nobody's going out of business because, oh, that day is over. Nobody hires a pure motivational speaker anymore. Sure they do. They hire them all the time.
Good. OK. Okay, well, I think that's probably encouraging for a lot of people who are on the line. Let me just go on a specific question from Dr. Jerry Zelm. He's been a doctor of chiropractic for 35 years, working on a speaking career. Is there a good market for health-related topics like wellness? I'm just going to plug that in because we're there.
Yes, and I think that market is going to continue to grow because one thing that's happened over the last few years is corporations have started realizing that their employees are whole people. And, I mean, everything, in, I mean, it almost ties in, the wellness movement almost goes hand in hand with the green movement, in that corporations are starting to think of themselves as wanting to be responsible citizens. Part of being a responsible citizen is taking care of your people. And there are a lot of events where there are certain time slots allotted for, we want something that's going to be of benefit to our people, personally. Yeah.
So let's talk about that. You know, lots of changes going on right now. We see a lot of shifts, and certainly the economy is something that is top of mind for people who are entering the market or have been in it a while. Give us your take on two parts to this. You know, what do you think changes during a recession, if anything? And what do you think speakers can do to maybe recession-proof themselves, speech-wise?
I'm going to say something that's going to fly in the face of what you would hear from 99% of the people. Maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
Here's what I think. I don't think anything changes.
Okay.
I think, here's the deal. I think to succeed in this business, you have to be good. You've got to be really good at what you do. I think when a recession comes along, you know how you get speaking? You got to be really good at what you do. Because what happens is, yeah, budgets get cut, entire meetings get canceled and go away. They just don't have, it's like we're not going to have our annual meeting this year because the company's down, the revenues are down, so things are a little tight. So that means there's less meetings. It doesn't mean necessarily that they're changing the kinds of speakers they want. They're just being way more careful about it, and there may be less meetings looking for those speakers. So what they do is they go to the speakers that have a reputation for being very, very good. You know, today is September 11th, and in 2002, the year after September 11th, that was a tough year for the speaking industry, because so many meetings just didn't happen. 2002 was the biggest year I had ever had, revenue-wise, up to that point. And now we're going through a tough economy. This year will be the biggest year I've ever had, revenue-wise, you know, up to this point. Next year will be bigger. And I think what has served me well, Jane, and understand you're talking to somebody that's been doing this for 28 years, it's just that if you can establish a reputation of she always does a great job, that's the number one thing that meeting planners are looking for. Because, listen, they're scared to death when they book a speaker. Because they're just thinking, please do a good job. Please, please, please do a good job. Because my job's on the line.
Make me look good.
I tell you what I have seen over the last few years, Jane. I've seen a lot more concern over, is the speaker going to do a good job? I mean, I've been doing it forever, and I get grilled by companies now. Joe, we've got a conference call. We've got 38 of our executives. They just want to check you out and be sure you're going to do a good job. I didn't run into that a few years ago. And now I think they're being more careful. And so I simply go back to, if you want a recession-proof your career, I think it's reputation. And reputation comes from consistency. Always doing a good job.
Yeah. So I think we're really answering a question that came in from Mark Raster from California. He said, just getting into the business, having only made recently the transition from free to fee, I find it hard not to fall into the trap of, oh, woe is me, otherwise known as, I just got going, and man, does my timing ever suck.
Well, let me tell you something. Remember what I've been saying. I made two or three references to, I don't discount what Mark just said, because in my little rant, I made two or three references to how long I've been doing it and reputation. Well, when you're first starting out, you don't have a reputation, and people don't know you. I mean, you'll get that, but you don't have it. And so it is tougher. Listen, I can totally relate to the oh, woe is me. My gosh, when I was starting out, I didn't have a clue. I was hanging on by my fingernails, and I said, oh, woe is me, for about 5 years. But the thing is, there were no Jane Atkinsons, there were no speaker launchers, there were no Canadian Speakers Associations, NSA Canada, there was no NSA US. And, well, no, they were. I didn't know enough to know they existed. They were there. I didn't know anything about the business. Now there's a lot more support and a lot more people who can help you cut the learning curve. But make no mistake about it. I mean, I think everybody on this line would agree. This is a tough business to get into. This is a tough business to get going. It's not easy. That's why if I were starting today, the first thing I would do would be run to the local Speakers Association meeting. And the second thing I would do is I would find somebody, and this is a shameless plug, but you know I believe in what you do, Jane. And there are other people that do similar things, and they're good too. But I do. When people call me and say I'm just getting started, I give them a list of three or four things, and one is to contact you, speakerlauncher.com, or someone who can help them. You know, that can really help cut the learning curve and give them some support. Let me throw this other thing is, if I were starting today, I would also do what I did when I did start. I would start local, or at least regional.
Okay.
It's just so much easier to put out a concentrated effort. And I'm not saying that's the only thing I would do, but my number one thing would be I want to get known regionally.
Right.
But because the thing is, word of mouth is so much more effective when you do it regionally, and
yeah,
somebody.
Right. Got more of a concentration.
Well, you've got like the local meeting planners who they get together, the Association of Meeting Planners International. They have the local chapter meeting, and they talk all the time. Who have you hired that's good lately?
Right.
Well, you know, one thing you ought to do is focus on where you are. Then there are other ways you market, obviously, beyond that.
Maybe you could get industry specific as well, because that climate is pretty small as well. Even
exactly. The same thing happens when you get industry specific.
Yeah.
They all talk to each other.
Yeah, okay. Well, what I'll say to the people on the line is, if you have a question about the speech as it pertains to business positioning questions, go ahead and send them over now to jane@speakerlauncher.com, and we'll just get ready to kind of start to roll into the speech mechanics. Louise Karch here in London had a question. Joe, do you wish you had found Elaine earlier, or has it been evolving? It has been evolving a part of what you enjoy.
You know, it's funny. At first, it wasn't part. Tell me again who submitted the question.
Louise.
When it started off, it was just. I mean, I was so dumb about the business. I didn't know anything about it, and so I was just flailing around on my own. And I would try this speech and that speech. I was speaking about stuff I had no business speaking about because I didn't really know it. But I was a pretty good speaker, not content-wise. I was just, you know, it was funny and entertaining and all that. So it worked out okay. And for me, I think it was partly a necessary process for me to get to the point where, okay, I've tried this, and this. What I really like and what I seem to be good at is this business stuff, especially customer service-oriented things. On the other hand, Louise, I do wish I had started to niche in earlier because I think it would have made it easier for bureaus to book me. Now, that's a choice that I made. I wanted to be booked by bureaus. There are other speakers that have no desire to work with bureaus. I spoke with one just a couple of days ago. He said, I have no desire to give 25% or whatever percentage the bureau charges to a bureau. I just don't want to do that. And there are some very established speakers that do hardly any, if any, bureau work. So you may not want to go the bureau route. I did. And once I started getting a niche, Louise, it sure made it easier for them to book me.
Yeah, they know where to put you in their database when they have a pigeonhole for you. Now, as far as your business model is concerned, you know, Joe has been a one-person operation with a lot of outside support. You know, you have suppliers and a team of people that are kind of outside your office, but you've worked alone for a really long time.
A long time. I had Annette, my wife, worked with me before she was my wife. And then after, and she worked with me and did marketing and was the liaison with all the bureaus and all that for, oh gosh, 12, 13 years maybe. And during part of that time, we also had another employee. So there were three of us for a few years. But then Annette got a master's and wanted to go do her own thing, which was cool. And I thought, I'm just going to do this by myself. And there are people. Now, the upside of that is I kind of like doing all that. I don't want somebody else doing my travel. I'm pretty particular about how I travel, when I travel, that sort of thing. I do it on the Internet in 5 minutes, so it's not a big time-consuming thing. But there are a lot of things that I do that other people have a staff person doing, and when I'm doing it, it keeps me from doing creative stuff.
Right.
And so that's the downside of it.
Right.
Part
of the reason why you decided to work with bureaus, because A, you're leveraging and having other people understand how to book you,
yeah.
But also you just don't want to do a lot of that outbound work.
I do no selling.
Right.
I haven't made a call or sent a piece of mail trying to get somebody to hire me. 18 years to 20 years maybe, because I want the bureaus to do that.
Right.
Now, I will say this. I'm Jane. I'm starting to get more direct business in the last 18 months than I've gotten in ages. So instead of being 95% bureau booked, this year I'm only going to be more like 75% bureau booked.
Did you say that because of the book?
Yes. A big, big part of it. That first book, Becoming a Category One, that changed everything.
Yeah.
That was just, that was a huge boost to my career. Doubled my fee within a year. My fee was already pretty good for me. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
And then within a year after the book came out, it doubled. And then it's gone up again since the other two books have come out. The books, there's two different ways to approach books. And I thought, I want to write a book that will reposition me as a speaker and let me get more money. Give me a lot more credibility and boost my reputation. And so I did that. And it's a really good book. My first book, I think, is still the best of the three that I've written.
Yeah, you seem to love it the most, too.
Well, I love it the most because customers love it the most. It's still the biggest seller. It outsells right now the other two.
Oh, wow.
But it's a really good book. And so what's cool is, like, if somebody calls me direct and says, hey, we're really interested, we heard about you, we're interested in having you speak, if they haven't read the book, I say, well, let me send you a copy of each of my three books. Or maybe I'll just send them the first book, Becoming a Category One.
Okay.
But it's like,
to clarify, that Becoming a Category of One is the book that we're talking about.
Yeah, that's, and that was the first book.
Yep.
But a book can really make a big difference. There are other people that write a book strictly for income, and that's cool. They sell it. I don't sell my books in the back of the room.
Right.
Now, I pre-sell books, like a company. Well, today, a company ordered 1,100 copies of Becoming a Category One for everybody to read before, you know, I go speak to them. Or to actually, no, that's not true. They're going to give them one at the presentation. So I pre-sale, but I don't sell in the back of the room. A lot of speakers have made huge amounts of money selling in the back of the room.
Right.
And a lot of those are self-published. That way they get to keep all the money instead of the publisher keeping all the money.
So your publisher is working a lot of those big volume sales, and they're loving it because those numbers just keep going up and up and up.
Yeah, they process the sales. They're not out actively selling the book. Don't get me wrong, though. My book made a number of bestseller lists. It never made the New York Times bestseller list.
Okay.
It never made the Wall Street Journal bestseller list. It made the Scripps Howard bestseller list. It was a big seller on Amazon. It made the Knight Ritter bestseller list, a lot of regional bestseller lists, made a couple of bestseller lists in Canada. But it was not a major, you know, killer bestseller.
But it got to the right people. And wasn't there one article that was written about it that was especially transitional in terms of...
New York Times.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the business section of the New York Times, they asked executives around the country, they said, what are you reading? And a savings and loan president in California said, I'm reading a book called Becoming a Category One. And the New York Times wrote that up, and that was pretty cool. That a lot of people saw that.
Awesome. Okay, we've got a question from Dave Fleming. How does Joe establish himself as an expert when he switches from lane to lane? What research, etc., does he do to aid that question?
Yeah.
Expert status?
That's a good question. As a matter of fact, it's a great question, because you can't be an expert by saying, hey, I'm an expert. I consider my job, I don't consider that my job is speaking or selling speeches. The speaking is the delivery system for what I do. What I do is study business. Today I've already read a lot of the latest issue of Fortune magazine. I've read the business section of the New York Times. I've gone on to 6 or 7 websites looking at following up on various little things I read about what this company has done or that company has done. And the other thing is that with my clients, every time I get hired by a company, I see it as an opportunity to learn a lot more about business, specifically whatever business they're in and what they're doing that does and doesn't work. So I am... As a matter of fact, when I give my speeches, Jane, I will say to the audience early on, I'll say, I'm really kind of like a reporter, because my job is to understand what works in business, and I'm here to report to you today on what I think are some of the best ideas out there and some of the trends and what I think is really important for your company to understand. So I don't really position myself. As a matter of fact, I will very specifically say, you know, I'm not really going to give you anything that are my ideas, but I'm really good at looking at what's going on and distilling down what is it they're doing that works and how can that be a benefit to you guys. And so it's funny, I kind of position myself with the audience, and part of this is a rapport thing. I don't position myself as, I'm smarter than you and I'm going to tell you what you ought to do. I position myself as, my job is to find out what works, and wow, have I found some cool things that I'm going to share with you today. Now, other people come in, and they might say, as a matter of fact, I know a new speaker who was in corporate America in sales in the telecom business, a very successful sales manager. So he positions himself as an expert based on his success in his previous work,
right,
which he ought to. That's exactly what he ought to do. He says, other people talk about sales. I've done it.
Right.
I can prove that I know how it works because I've done it. See, I'm not in that position.
Okay. So let's shift gears here now and start talking about, a little bit more about speech mechanics. We
mm-hmm.
want people to really have the tools to be able to walk away from the call to help take their speech to the next level, which will in turn help recession-proof.
Yep.
So talk a little bit about what happened when you did the Let It Go speech in Phoenix. Because some people on the line heard it, some people did not, but it seemed to have a resonance with professional speakers. Just talk a little bit to that.
The thing that made that speech work, and Jane, looking back on it now, what is it, 3 years later or four, whatever it is, that's the best speech I ever gave in my life.
Wow, really?
Yeah. Yeah, based on the reaction. I still, to this day, get emails and letters from people about that speech. It was, it was referenced at this year's NSA convention in a number of different... It's just the best speech I ever gave in terms of the impact that it had on the audience. It was just this... It was the wildest thing I've ever experienced. And I think what made it work is that I so... made it about them.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And if you can do that with any audience, gosh, Jerry Coffey,
mm-hmm.
former great speaker, former Vietnam POW, when he gives his speech, somehow he doesn't make it about himself, although it's totally about his experience. And at one point in the speech, he says, I know you're wondering to yourself, how would I hold up if I were in that kind of situation? He says, let me tell you something, you'd hold up just fine. He says that you've got a lot more strength than you probably give yourself credit for. Anyway, the key is, I think the key to that NSA speech, the reason it works so well, is that I made it so personally about the people in that particular audience. You make your speech about the people in the audience, and they're going to love you.
Wow. Well, let's just tie that together, because Gary Coffey was probably the first impactful speaker that I ever saw in my career, aside from Les Brown. And I can remember, I think it was Washington.
Yes, it was.
15 years ago, you were there. I met probably everybody I have worked with and for in the industry at that one meeting.
Yeah.
And he spoke, and I remember it as if it was yesterday.
It was magic.
And there are very few speeches that are like that, but I will say that the Let It Go speech in Phoenix, especially because of that phrase, let it go, really stuck with people, and they are still talking about it, like you said, four years later.
And I'll tell you something else. Regardless of what kind of speaker you are, I mean, in terms of topic or niche or whatever, audiences can sense if you are giving a speech versus speaking to them from your heart. And I mean, even if it's pure business, you can either come from purely from your head and, you know, think, okay, a really good speaker makes this kind of gesture, and a really good speaker does this with their voice. No, just stop it. A really good speaker comes from their heart, and the gestures they make and all that other stuff it just doesn't matter all that much. If you're coming from your heart, if you're being purely you, then you're way ahead of all the speakers that are trying to be a good speaker on the platform, because they get in their head about it. But my speeches are so conversational, they're hardly even speeches.
And you get out there with your page of notes that you scribbled on right up until the moment you walk on.
Oh, I carry my notes around in my hand. I'll be in front of 10,000 people. I'll have my notes in my hand, and I'll go off on a tangent, and I'll stop and say, wait a minute, what point was I making a minute ago? Somebody will say, it was this. I'll say, okay, wait a minute. Oh, yeah, here we go. They don't care. The audience never goes, ooh, what a lousy speaker. They go, gosh.
I was referencing when I said messy, you know.
Oh, I'm the messiest speaker on the planet.
And you're okay with that.
Well, I make way more money now than back when I first started and I was trying to be a perfect speaker.
Polished.
Yeah, I'm, you know me, I'm not polished.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the mechanics.
Okay.
Openings.
Well,
what do you feel are most important for them to know about openings?
I think opening is I want to do something that immediately really gets their attention, be it something that is an impactful statement that really resonates about their business. Like if I'm speaking to bankers, I might come out on stage and say, here's the deal. You guys are a commodity. You're like a pound of nails. And a pound of nails is a pound of nails. The only difference is price. What I'm saying is the marketplace, your customers, everybody else's customers look at you and say, I know your advertising says you're different, but you all look like you're doing the same thing. Now, that's a very kind of in-your-face provocative opening.
Right.
And I would have to know the audience before I would do that. More likely, I would make the same point, but do it with something funny, and I've got ways to do that. I just try to do something that gets their attention and has them thinking, wow, this guy sounds like he's going to be a little bit different. And a lot of times I'll try to do something humorous.
Okay.
I like to do something with some humor in it right there. And also something that lets them know very quickly that I'm playful and I'm not stuffy and I'm just talking to them. I'm not speeching at them.
So the humor, you think it just changes the dynamic of the room immediately?
Yeah, and it could be that you might want to do the exact opposite thing. You might want to come out and start with something incredibly dramatic. You might want to say, it was 11:35 at night, and I didn't think I was going to live past midnight. Now, I don't know where you'd go from there, but you might have a story that fits that. So you might want to start out with something that people go, whoa.
It sounds like something Fripp would say.
Yeah, it does.
I could hear her accent almost in the background.
Oh, no kidding. No kidding.
Okay, so let's keep going on humor for a minute because,
sure.
The joke, only use humor in your presentation if you want to get paid. A lot of people are thinking about it, and they're thinking, well, I'm not really sure how to do humor. What are some different ways that have worked for you and ways that you know have worked for other people?
Well, I have one of those minds that is good with humor. And a lot of my best stuff comes from, I do a lot of interaction with the audience. A lot of my funniest stuff comes from somebody in the audience will say something, and my response to that will put them on the floor laughing. So I'm good at that. Other people aren't. Other people may be saying, I don't have a funny bone in my body. Don't worry about it. You know, that old thing is you only have to be funny if you want to get paid. That's not true. There are a lot of really great speakers that have built terrific careers, and they're not funny. Now, I would bet that everybody on this call, though, has a sense of humor. And it's enough just for your sense of humor to come through. And people say, well, I'm not good at jokes. Well, I don't tell jokes. I don't tell any jokes in my presentation.
Right.
But I can recall, you know, times that something happened to me maybe in real life where I was the butt of the joke. By the way, that's been something I've done forever, is a lot of the funny stories I tell, I'm the butt of the joke.
Right.
Not somebody else.
Self-deprecating.
Yeah, I'm not ever the hero of anything in my speeches. For one thing, I don't have anything particularly heroic to talk about. But I've been the butt of a lot of jokes, so I can go there. So I wouldn't worry about being funny. You don't have to be funny. But if you've got a sense of humor, just let that come out.
Okay, and be playful and be brave enough to be playful.
Yeah, if that fits your message.
Right. Okay, so Rob Shore said, back to what we were talking about openings, learning from a prior flop, don't you think provocative, in-your-face openings are dangerous?
Yeah.
Especially for a new speaker?
Oh, I absolutely do. That's why, right after I said that, I said I would really have to know my audience. Rob has, everybody please listen to what Rob just said, because I think, and when I was first starting out, I did tend to be kind of cocky and almost kind of, there were times when I was almost like picking at the audience, trying to provoke them. And I think that worked against me. I think I did okay in spite of that. Because unless that's your thing, like a Larry Winget, but Larry Winget is to speaking like Don Rickles is to comedy. And the people know that's what they're getting, and so it's funny. But I think Rob is absolutely right. I would only use that provocative thing if it were an audience, for example, that already knew me from two past speeches.
Right, great.
And that way, the relationship's already been built, and I can do more of that. No, I would tend to go, let me tell you something. The first thing I want that audience to do is like me.
Right.
The first thing I want them to do in my presentations is like me. And so, big caution about the coming on with a provocative opening.
So let's talk about building rapport and audience relatability. What are some things that you have done that has worked to build instant rapport?
Single most important thing for me is that the audience understands that I know who they are and what they do.
Right.
A big name speaker spoke before me at an event. Big name speaker. Everybody loves this speaker. This audience didn't love him because at one point in his speech, he said, you guys are out there trying to sell cars every day, and it's not easy. It wasn't the car salespeople. It was the finance managers from the car dealers. And the second he said that, the thought was, he doesn't care about us enough to know who we are. So for me, it's understanding my audience, and I mean knowing them. But that's the thing. I've been studying business for 28 years, and somebody can call me and say, Joe, I don't know how much you know about the such-and-such industry, and I can say, well, I do know this, and I can talk for 5 minutes. I don't care what the business is,
because
I read about everything, because I'm a generalist. I work with lots of different kinds of audience.
So that's good. You were talking about when a client first calls, you know, you're able to probably know what it is that they're talking about very, very quickly and start to address those needs.
Jane, and it can be as little as when a credit union calls. Let's say the head of a credit union calls me, or the head of an association of credit unions calls me and says, Joe, we're thinking about using you as our speaker. You know, we're credit unions. And for me to say, well, here's the thing. With a credit union, you've got to convince your members that it's more advantageous for them to stay with you. The second I use the word members instead of customers,
right,
they go, bunk, he knows who we are.
Mm-hmm.
He understands it. He understands at least that much about our business.
So that should come out in your pre-call questionnaire and your pre-call interviews. What do you do when you get with a client on the front end?
When I get with a client on the front end, I ask a lot of questions. If a potential client says, why should we hire you? I say, oh, I don't know that you should hire me. That's what we need to find out. Let's talk about your business and what you're trying to accomplish with this event and where your company's going, and let's see if I'm a right match, because I may not be. So that's what the process of this call is to find out if I'm the right one. If I'm not, I can probably steer you towards somebody I know that is. But it's very much, that's always been my answer to that question. Why should we hire you? I don't know that you should. Let's find out. I've got to ask you a lot of questions.
Great response. And then when you have the gig, what is your process for getting to know the client?
Well, everything on their website, number one. I mean, the website, my gosh, that just kind of makes it a slam dunk. If you've got a computer, you can find out everything there is to know about a company. Go to their press release section. See all the press releases for the last year. And then reference something that's happened in the company that they're proud of. The other thing is, I always say, because a lot of times they'll say, well, Joe, our CEO is going to speak in the morning, and then two of our senior vice presidents, and you're going to be right after lunch. And I always say, would you please send me an advance copy of their speeches so that I can tie my message into theirs? I mean, I always do that. That's just always, always, always.
So that's why they love you. And so there's not any kind of time frame in your mind in terms of preparation.
You know, not really. I mean, you've seen me, Jane. I will literally be crossing stuff out on my speech and replacing it with something else. Jane, I was backstage literally that opening video at the NSA speech.
Right.
The opening video was running, and I was looking at my notes, and I thought, oh, my gosh, that doesn't go there. That goes up here. And I drew a bunch of arrows because I was just looking at it, and I thought, that's in the wrong place. It would work way better if I moved it up here. So I even held my notes out. Remember when I went on stage?
People were laughing.
And I said, Lisa Ford, who was the convention chair, Lisa Ford said, are you ready for your speech? I said, well, here's my notes. Take a look. And she almost passed out. Because they were so scribbled on and errors everywhere and stuff marked out. But that's just the way I do it. I don't go out with a prepared speech. I go out with a conversation.
Right.
And a whole bunch of stuff I want to talk about.
And you do everything necessary on the front end to make sure that you show up prepared. And that, bringing it back to rapport, is the reason why they think that you work for them and not
for yourself. If you're prepared, you'll get rapport.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. So one thing here, I want to ask a question on behalf of Candace Asher, who I think you know.
My buddy.
Your buddy. I want to be able to tie my personal hardship victories speech into their business adversity issues. How do I customize and tie that in?
Let me give you a quick example and hopefully it'll illustrate the larger point. Years ago, I did a series of conventions, and the other speaker was Dan Jansen, who was the speed skater.
Right.
Who won the Olympics after not winning for years and years. And during one of the breaks, he said, I love the way you make your stuff about them. He said, I just don't see any way I can do that. I said, Dan, try this. I said, early on, within the first couple of minutes, why don't you say this? Say, you know, you and I, and we were speaking to travel agency owners. Like 2,000 at a time. I said, Dan, go out on stage and say, you know, we're a lot alike, because the travel agency business was going through a huge transition at the time. Say, we're a lot alike. We have to go out there every single day and run a race. I do mine to mount around a skating track. You do yours in the travel agency. You know the big difference between what you do and what I do? They don't change the rules on me in the middle of the game. And the place went nuts. And I was standing off stage and he looked at me and it was like, wow.
Yay!
So all you have to do is say, what is there about my experience that relates to the human experience? And if you've been through a hardship, now, I'm oversimplifying this, and Candace already knows this, but for everybody else on the line, just think in terms of, what is it that I do, or from my experience, that is part of the human experience, just part of being human, or that is part of any business? Because let me tell you something. You can stand through in front of any audience in the world and say, you know, I don't know that there's a group of people anywhere that has gone through the amount of change that you people have been through in the last few years. I don't care who they are, Jane. 99% of them will look at each other and go, oh, boy, she knows. She knows what we're going through. I mean, it's simple as that. There are certain things that everybody goes through.
Right. Things are speeding up for everybody, and that's the common denominator. Okay, so let's talk about closings for a minute. How important do you think closings are?
I think they're very important. It's possibly my weakest area.
Okay.
Always has been. I just kind of dribble off into walking off stage. You know, I had a really strong closing at NSA, but it was this huge thing about I disappeared and I didn't come back, and there was a video, and the video said Joe's gone. That was without question the best closing I've ever had in my life. But that was a one-time thing, and I don't know that I could get that to work for another group. Generally now, I will end by making a large summarizing point. You know, and it'll start with something like this. I'll say, you know, at the end of the day, I think what it all boils down to for any organization that's trying to succeed in business, and then I might go in any number of directions, depending on, and I'll try. Here's something good. If you can tie your closing into their meeting theme, then you're probably on to something. If you can say, you know, in closing, let me say this. When I look at your theme, which is Reach for the Stars, it makes me think of something I read that Michelangelo wrote many, many years ago, which is the problem for most of us is not that we aim too high and miss it, but that we aim too low and hit it. And I think you are reaching for the stars in this organization, and I think you're not going to aim too low. You're going to aim high, and you're going to hit it. Thank you, and have a great rest of the convention, or whatever.
Woo-hoo.
But I mean, I've got to
keep it close there. But
let me stop before I start losing ground. But the thing is, Jane, I've got 50 quotes that I can tie to different themes. And make it, you know, my very personal closing that ties in with their meeting theme.
Fantastic. Now we have a couple minutes left. Let's talk about stories for a minute. If anybody wants to ask a question, email me at jane@speakerlauncher.com, and we'll have it be all questions at this point. Well, let's talk a little bit about stories while we're waiting for those to come in.
Okay.
What do you think is poem and so on and so forth. There's a lot of jokes about the way that stories can transfer. What's your storytelling style?
Well, my storytelling style is that, number one, every story I tell is a personal story. It's something I observed or participated in. I don't, for example, tell the starfish story. I don't tell, and by observed, my story might be, you know, I read a really interesting article in Fortune magazine. They quoted so-and-so, and I will tell that story. But then I'll tie it to something that's coming very much from me, a point that I want to make or whatever. As far as the funniest stories that I tell, they are all, every single one of them, from personal experience.
Right.
Something that happened to me that is, you know, something I would recommend that everybody on this line, I'm very, very serious about this, because when I work with speakers or they ask my advice, I say, first thing you need to do, I say, first thing you need to do is buy The Wealthy Speaker. Second thing you need to do, get a DVD, buy it, because you need to watch it once a month. It's called Comedian. And it's a documentary that Jerry Seinfeld did about when he left his TV show and started writing a brand new live comedy act from the top up. Get that DVD because it teaches you volumes about the work involved in writing and writing good material. But all of my best stories are things that happened to me. And the reason I thought of Seinfeld was the Jerry Seinfeld show, TV show, was about human stuff that happens every day, like what if you're out in a public street and you have to use a bathroom and you can't find a bathroom?
Right.
And you're running from store to store and they won't let you use your bathroom. Well, they do a whole show around just that.
Right, right.
And it, but it's, people can relate to human experiences.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'm going to give our listeners another piece of homework, which is an absolute shameless plug for the DVD that you and I did together, which is called Diary of a Killer Keynote, and it's how to develop and deliver a keynote that blows them away. And it's got the Let It Go speech that we've been referencing from Phoenix on it.
Best speech I ever gave in my life.
So they're crazy if they don't get this. And then it also has an interview with us kind of chatting about the speech and dissecting it. So I'm absolutely shameless about putting in a plug for that. Well, Joe, it's 3:01. I know that you are absolutely exhausted, and I want to thank you so much despite your late night goings on.
Happy to, but I got to go because I'm going to pick Jess up and take her to the state fair, and we're going to look at the cows.
Well, great. Well, give the two little girls a big hug from all of us. And
I will.
Open up the line.
Thanks for listening to the Wealthy Speaker Show. Please visit speakerlauncher.com for your free Wealthy Speaker audit and visit speakerlauncher.com/podcast for show notes and many more resources to help you catapult your speaking business. See you soon, Wealthy Speakers.